Welcome, everyone, to Thunderdome Metal Reviews, your church of heavy metal, where we're going to do a discography blast of my choosing, much to the chagrin of some of my compatriots, I'm sure. I am Ben, with me as always are David, Tracy, and Gabe. My friends, how are we doing in this convivial evening?
De los Narcos Antiguos!
Tell us how you really feel. I'm suffering from a machete attack at the moment.
I'm suffering from satanismo, so which is a more pervasive problem.
Indeed, it sure is. I guess you may have guessed already by Tracy's wild gesticulation that we are doing a Brujeria discography blast. We did their latest album earlier in 2023. I'm not sure exactly when this will come out, whether it'll be 2023 or 2024, but I decided to back the truck up and get the four previous albums neatly into a blast. So that is what we are doing.
This was a lot of Brujeria. This was. Yeah,
sure was.
It sure was.
Something.
I was very happy because, as I was saying off camera, I'm the sort of maniac that listened, that was an early adopter. Like, so I had these first two albums and, like, would spin them like a sane person would in 1995. So I'm interested to see Tracy's face right now indicates this was not his experience. How did you feel about it? Let's start with the Neophyte. Tracy, how are you feeling about.
In the looking at a bar like a graph, I feel like the experience is better as it went along, but this was not a trip I would willingly do myself.
So this is like a Clockwork Orange type situation again.
Yeah, I'm just like, yes, I'm here because I have to, but it's not a trip I'm gonna turn around and like, hey, let's do it again, guys.
I don't understand why you don't like MS-13's grindcore band, which essentially is what this is.
Yeah, and let's hear from Gabe, because I was actually shocked at how little Gabe liked the album we did this year.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and you know what? I was really afraid of going into this. Like, I was just like kind of dreading it a little bit. But to be honest, it really, as Tracy said, I think it got better as I went along, because not only did it get better, like, as I sort of did it more times, but like judging from the latest album, you can't really, I don't think you can really understand what's going on if you just hear that record in isolation, the one that we did.
I agree.
Previously, like, yeah, there's some resemblance to some of the stuff going on here, but it is in some way, I'm sorry to say it, a return to form album. and for that, we don't have to get into the discussion of that album, but I think in some ways that makes it really not interesting compared to some of these records. And I was really pleasantly surprised by some of these. So like, yeah, I went into it with trepidation, but I didn't come out with such a bad experience.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think that the latest album, and we'll talk about this as it goes through, at some point, this went from being a side somewhat slash like novelty act to being a real thing.
Yes.
And taking it slightly more seriously. And I think I know where I would place that in the four albums that we listen to here. But yeah, the latest album, I think, is definitely an outgrowth of that.
Yeah, it changed the sound a fair amount. And it became a little bit more, I don't know, as we'll talk about, these first two albums are fucking abrasive as shit. I mean, they're like pouring Drano in your eye sockets in a way that they do transition a little bit to Teehee, you know, a Day of the Dead skeleton pointing at you, like they're winking at you a little bit. There's not a lot of winking when they take you apart with pliers on that first album. Just that fucking cover. Right. I mean, and I get it. Who amongst us has not read Mexican murder magazines? But I fucking love The Raza Odiada. Fucking love that album. Holy shit. And I found out about it because of Dino existing, right? Because he was part of that. Mm-hmm. And Metal Magazine said there's a thing he's doing. And I used to spend a ton of time in LA, which is, I don't want to fight with you all, but the most important city in metal. I know it kind of is. It certainly was, I think, in the 80s and 90s. No offense to New York City. We don't have to argue about this, but Milwaukee. No, anyway, but LA, just that whole environment in the middle of that Pete Wilson shit and Proposition.
Especially on the second album, yeah.
Yes, and that's where that was when I got on the ride, essentially, was that album had just dropped, and now all that shit was happening, where California was fighting a rearguard action to, you know, better dead than red, essentially, and so it was a weird, fucked up time, and I loved this, and I loved, you know, because I was so into shit like Roots, Bloody Roots and all that sort of third worldist Bob Marley stuff. And so this was, that had elements of that, right? There's the Subcomandante Marcos on the front. I'm like, fuck yes, Zapatistas, which is a very that moment thing.
It sure was. 100%. Right.
And I love it was complicated because it also lampooned the PRI, which had fucking just that name, the Party of Institutionalized Revolution. You're like, wait, what? Like, is it turning? Anyway, that hideous thing. I thought the shtick was amazing given how terrified white people are of them, you know, obviously. And that was very clear in that. I'm sorry, I'm already talking about the second album, but in general, I thought as performance art and a middle finger to, I mean, this is every single pundit, right wing pundit's worst nightmare, right? People coming, narco gangsters beheading people, dealing drugs to the youth for Satan. I mean, it writes itself, right?
Dude, like it's taken so many elements, like the Satanism from black metal, and then like just the ultra violence of gangster rap, and then spinning it into the Mexican culture and the immigrant identity, and like the narco terrorism, which wasn't even technically a term yet, I don't think, or was just beginning to be used.
It was a reality. It was not a term.
Yeah, no, totally. It was a thing that was happening, but like nobody had codified it as such.
And
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, this was also a context, my God, Latin America in the 80s, just in terms of the amount of fucking, well, that country specifically, tens of thousands of them just fucking mowed down in the before the 68 Olympics, or just anything in Central America at all in the 80s. So there was an enormous, and there's a whole churn.
Condor, look that shit up.
All that shit. But all that is like a churn, as you know well, like the whole gang universe and that, and the drugs, it's all just a hideous sort of chainsaw tearing through Latin America.
America wrote the check for, if not like trained the people, often doing both. And most Americans have no fucking clue about any of that.
And they talk about some of that. Noriega makes some appearances. They're right. Like that. Yeah. Yes. They're Brujeria is very aware that the CIA is on this mission as well.
For sure.
Is that fucking movie Once Upon a Time in Mexico, where Johnny Depp is just like shooting chefs all across Mexico for.
Yep.
And, yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
If nobody else has anything else to say about the band as a whole or kind of the cesspool that they came out of.
It's LA is amazing. Yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah. But also, like, to be fair to them, and I think we touched on this in the original review, one of the other impetus behind this was all these Spanish-speaking kids who had learned English lyrics that they didn't really understand a death metal were super really into it. And they're like, well, fuck, we should represent our culture in this. For and sure. That's kind of cool to hear. Just in a completely over-the-top way, as you can tell by the debut album, Matando Guerreros, Killing Whites, released on July 6th in 1993 on Roadrunner Records, had a runtime of 33 minutes. It was produced by Brujeria, which was Juan Brujo on vocals, Asesino, who is Dino Cazarens, on guitar, Hongo, on guitar and additional bass, who is Shane Thomas Embury, Guerrera Sin Fe, on bass and additional guitars, William David Gold, Antazma, additional bass and backing vocals, Pat Old, Pinche Peach, samples and backing vocals, and Granudo on drums, who is Raymond Herrera. So like half of Fear Factory is effectively on this debut album.
As it should be.
Yes.
Well, that's what led me to them. Like I said, it was like Metal Magazine. It's like, you should check this other thing those guys do. And this cover, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it's
in a record store. Time. Yes, it is.
Yeah. What is that again?
A drug murder from the 80s.
Yeah, just some person who was killed in.
Just like two Zane Juarez.
Yeah.
Oops.
Who became known as Coco Loco and is their mascot now.
Yes. Yes. There's like a head that travels with them, like they're Eddie, essentially. Yeah. A class outfit all around, Tracy. Your face right now.
I'm just like,
why are you sounding like you're getting a colonoscopy?
So I feel like this first one is on par with getting a colonoscopy while awake. Like just not even out. Just like, here you go. Just
it's really rough. I know.
Yeah, because this one I think is also the most distilled in its most pure form. I think is the best way I would describe it.
Yeah, they didn't cut this one.
One with anything except rat poison.
This is just like rat poison and fucking colonoscopy in a bag. Like here you go.
Shit, Tracy. So this went well for you. This first.
This one, like, it was a nice. The other albums were a nice reprieve compared to the first one.
Hell yes. Well, that's how they got
also
ready,
Tracy,
right?
This is a lot of tracks in a short amount of time. 19 tracks on this fucking thing.
19 tracks and 32. Yeah, like you said, that's barely a minute a track. And the thing is, yep. A little bit also, it's like dealing with the foreign language as well. Because like we've done Rammstein back, boom, boom, boom. Or sure. When David had us do.
Sorry.
Oomph. Who was it? Oomph was the only other one we've really done in a foreign language very consistently back to back. It's just kind of like there's a lot of variation between those. So you can kind of tell when one track ends and another begins. This, no, it's just like,
I don't care.
Here you go.
That.
It's just, you're going straight. That's all that you know.
Dude, every track is the same anyway. Who cares when it starts or finishes?
Yeah. And that's basically my, I would say that's more or less my main complaint with this album is that it's basic. And given that I think that the newest album sounds the most like this one, I think they can do a lot better and they ultimately do a lot better. It's not that it has zero charm, but I think that like they're not really trying to do anything super special on this one. Whereas I think the style at least changes up a bit over time. And I think that they hit you where it hurts. Right. And it is, you know, they don't really, they don't beat around the bush. So they get right to the point, which is a plus, I suppose. And, you know, you're done fairly quickly with it. So it's, I guess that's a bonus maybe. Yeah. I just feel like you can tell it's not something that's a real thing at this point. It's kind of just like,
it's not,
let's make some people angry.
Yeah. Or I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I'm fluent in Spanish or understand the language very well at all, but like there's skits in here and you can tell that they're skits. I mean, it really does remind me, this is the proof of concept album. Like, let's, you know, yeah, we've come up with the characters, the mythology around the band, and we're just going to go completely over the top. And the music is kind of secondary, I feel. And they might have disagreed at the time, but that's really kind of how I feel about it. Because, I mean, there's some cool riffs on here, and the guitar tone is cool. But, like, it is pretty much just straightforward, like, play as fast and as deathy as we can. And with, like, ludicrous lyrics and a few like, again, gangster rap interludes along the way.
I assume this was very much the, I mean, I know this was very much the, we've got 3 weeks between our tour and your tour and we've got to bang this thing out is how I think it happened. I assume this was like a jam or a peel session almost where they just, no, let's make songs. And here they are is my guess. Cause you know, all of them were, it was not, as you've mentioned, they had not mutated into an outfit that was staying together. But there's a shit ton of them in it. So their schedules, Jesus.
Exactly.
But there's like, so many of them in different bands. Yeah, like I think. Yeah.
Five different guitarists and three bass players. So it's kind of really
July.
What track.
So, yeah. This works in one week in July. Like, and obviously there might have been some rotation. But anyway, yeah, this is, I agree with you 100%. It's the concept album. Proof of concept. This is what they took to the money guys who are like, who obviously said yes, because the next album, much more money was thrown at it. I was very struck, as we're going to talk about that jump, because I bought this album and I was like, okay, I don't know, man. I didn't listen to it very much. I listened to, like I said, the Raza Odiada a ton. This album, I spun it a few times and pretended I lost it. It's not that good.
It's one of those you kept in the forefront for the album cover, but you never actually pulled it out. Just like, yeah.
Tracy, we might need to kill whites. All right. So I want to be prepared. Sonic.
I mean, I do think that there are a few stellar moments on this album, a few high spots that stand out. But really, like, it's all, and again, this could be the language barrier. I'm willing to admit that. But there is, like, a bit of sameness throughout this entire thing, mainly because they don't really shift gears. It's like fucking pedal to metal from the very beginning.
Well, I think we established when we talked about the last record that the vocals are just kind of like, you get what you get. And, but I think it's even worse. It's even harder to handle for some people, including me, if the music is just doesn't change a lot. And maybe if they had done something like that, they wouldn't have been able to kind of just bang it out and get it done with whatever restrictions they had at the time. And it was clearly enough, but not my favorite.
Sure. So, shall we talk about tracks before we move on to the other album?
Sure. And the answer is none of them.
Oh, snap.
I mean, come on. You don't want to spin Montando Gueros? The track slaps.
It sure does.
It does slap.
Bojack, Stace is okay. It's got its moments. I agree with Ben. I have a fond place in my heart for this album. I just don't want to give it to civilians.
Yeah, I mean, like, like that one, Narco Satanicos, Culeros.
Yeah, these are classic. The
Chubby Castles for 43 seconds. That was pretty great.
Classic tracks for a dinner party.
Yeah, Chia Tu Madre.
Yeah, this is it. You always say, Tracy, I could just spin this at a dinner party, right? Right.
Especially Molestando Niños Muertos.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have.
Wow. Okay. Well.
So, but I also would probably say that this is, to your point earlier, David, about performance art, I would almost, especially at 33 minutes, just take
the just do it. You need this. This may not be the album you want, but it's the album you need. That's what I'm saying. You being, I don't know, I guess Gueros, mostly, but you just, the general you.
The general we.
The editorial we.
Mm-hmm. They come back in roughly 2 years, August 22nd of 1995, with their second studio album, Raza Riata. It was 40 minutes and 12 seconds, also on Roadrunner. Asesino is the listed producer for this one. There's still Juan Brujo on vocals, Asesino on guitars and bass, Quiero Sin Fe on bass and guitars, Fantasma on bass and vocals, Hongo on bass guitar and drums, Granudo on drums, Pinche Peach on vocals, and J.R. Hosokan on Direction, which is Jello Biafra, for those who don't know, and he just wrote some lyrics for some of this. I don't believe what he
did. And, you know, the cover, the Kennedy's cover later, it all just circles back.
And this is the one that has the photo of the Zapatista commander on the, that's the album cover, or deputy commander.
I already mentioned I like this album. I listened to some so fucking much and bought it in LA and look at it. Just look at it. Anyway. So
that's what he did. He is the, on the opening track, Jello Biafra is the guy playing.
He's Peter Wilson. Yeah. No, that's what's so hysterical about it. It's the California Uberalis guy playing that piece of shit governor.
Well, you know, they hadn't gone after him quite hard, so I can understand why.
Also his role in Guar's feature film.
Indeed so. That is accurate.
He's good at playing villains. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Right here. This is it.
The irony of it all, that like Henry Rollins makes a great cop in things.
That's true. He's thought about the questions involved.
Quite a lot, yeah.
Right. So, what did you think, Tracy? I feel like we have to go to the trauma victim from the first album.
Trauma victim first. This one is obviously an improvement over the other one, because this one is it's cut a little bit. Like it's not quite as pure. So there's a little bit you can handle with it. And I think that some of the stuff kind of comes through and is a little bit better. Again, it does kind of have the same, like, it's a lot of tracks sound similar and it's in foreign language. So it all just kind of, it's one long 40 minute song in my head that's like, all right, where do I get off this ride at? And apparently never is the answer to that question. But it does feel like they do kind of slow it down at points of times on this album, though. That adds, I think, a different kind of like tonal shift to it than just the other straight, just sheer insanity that was the first album.
There's also a lot more straight ahead songs and less like skits on here, or just like 40 second tracks where they're just ranting about something. Almost everything on here is a song. Even like the opener with Jello Biafra as Peter Wilson, it's you know, it starts out as a skit, but then it goes into a song, so it's a lead in.
I'm sure the label guys had a conversation with them about some of that, right? A&R rep. Like, somebody was like, okay, I'm going to need you to not come as hard as you came last time, because someone who's only recently been born named Tracy cannot handle it. So I need you to weak sauce it. And this is it. But this album is clearly fucking better. I admit it. I mean, my God. I assume they just rehearsed more. I mean, because this is still the transient phase. I think that's not changed here. I would argue it's the next one, maybe. Anyway, you seem to have already figured out when that transition happens. We're going to play a game.
Well, it's when I think it is. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I think it's the next one. Anyways, but they were clearly rehearsing more, and Asesino was given more than $10 to produce it. So it's just, You're probably going to not like the grade I give the last one, but I think that's a, that album is important anyway, but I think this album is significantly better. It's just, and I think they would probably agree, but that other one I assume was made in 10 minutes in a garage. So,
well, I think, I was going to say, historical importance aside, I think that pound for pound, this is a much better record than the first one. I really like the fact that this has a lot more kind of a punk rock edge to it. I also like the gang vocals. And near the end of the album, you have some stylistic, you know, kind of changes that really make it much more interesting. Like they get into death and doom. Not to say that like the last track isn't a snooze fest, but like they're doing something different at least. And part of it is like, obviously the language too. Like, I don't understand everything that's going on there, but I think this is leaner and meaner. It's just, there's more songs, period. There's 15 tracks on this, but I would say of the 19 tracks on the previous album, most of them are not songs. as in like fully developed ideas. Yeah. Like they're just kind of like sketches, I guess.
Yeah, but they're like a riff and maybe a verse or something, you know, or a chorus.
Another thing that I appreciate, and this also, you know, speaks to my bias as like a non-Spanish speaker, like I think that it's brilliant the way they introduce the record, because that pulls you into that that political context with Prop 187, which like I didn't know about because I was not, you know, conscious of things going on in other parts of the country at that time, I would say, or not as conscious as I maybe could have been. But yeah, it you know, makes it pretty clear like where they're trying to take a stand, you know, for anybody who's not necessarily paying attention or doesn't get it already. So I think that's bringing more people in.
That was a big part of the attraction. I mean, it was very obvious that they were politically signaling in a way that was not obvious on the previous album. I also think you don't have to apologize for the fact that Boston Public Schools spent too much time covering hardcore and breakdowns to like get into those kinds of things. So it is not your fault, Gabe.
I was talking about Prop 187.
I know you're talking about, why would you learn about that when you could be learning about breakdowns? That's my point.
Yeah.
I didn't design the curriculum.
Yeah, I do think their political consciousness is much more on point here than it was on the first album. I'm not going to say that it was completely lacking there, but it was not as serious, given the political climate that had changed during the recording of this album. That makes a lot of sense, too.
Yeah, things had definitely escalated in Los Angeles.
Yeah. All right. Anything else to say? Again, I really like the tone of the guitars here. I do agree that the song ideas are much more fleshed out. I kind of like them all, to be honest.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tracy.
I was going to say, you said the tone of the guitars on here. I feel like you kind of start to see here, and you definitely see it in the next album, like Dino's personal like touch and the songwriting come through a lot. Because there's a lot of like, especially the next one, what I want to call Fear Factory riffs in it. Kind of like just a very similar how he has that, a very Dino signature sound to him.
Yeah, and we know I'm a mark for that.
Huh?
I said, and we know I'm a mark for that.
Yeah. I would say I like Revolution La Migra off this album. Like, I do think this is a step up, but I think it really shines on the next album. It's kind of like where you're much more palatable in my taste.
There's like I said, I would say all of them, but there is a track that I bet is incredibly fun live that is on this album. It's, you know, it's Narcos, Drug Dealer Advice, where it's just like, yes.
The list of positives and negatives. I fucking love that song.
I do too. That is so fun.
That whole run from Raza Oriada to Consejos Narcos is amazing. I love the first half of this record. Echando Chingazos, that thing is a banger. La Migra, La Migra, La Migra. That song is like straight on punk. Revolucion, where he's just like, the PRI can go fuck themselves, which accurate. Okay. So I love the first half of this record. The back half is okay. I think it, I don't know if I want to say falls off, but I don't think it has as many bangers as the first half.
Well,
it happens. There's a lot of songs on here, though. Are you sorry? What were you going to say?
Ritmo Satanicos is entirely too long.
It is.
I mean, it's just like three times longer than almost, or at least twice as long as any of their other songs at this point. It's just like, come on, guys.
Yeah, it has a bit of a weak sauce closer too, but it's still the first half of this album, and even the second half, it's still fun and cool. But I'm very much tracks 1 through 6 on this thing, which I spun constantly. Those were the days.
Yeah, I would agree with David that the first half of this record is really great. I would even tack on Almost Eventa and La Ley de Plomo as included in my, you know, what I consider the best run. But I would say Take the Ride, even though I'm not even such a huge fan of, like, you know, the last like quarter of the record. It's just so much better than the first one that I would just listen to this any day over that.
I did do that. I said I bought them both, and then it was like, I'll just save this for Tracy. I don't know who that is yet, but one day I will, and he needs it.
I'm glad you're thinking that far ahead for me.
Dude, I'm going to get you a shrine, like, on the cover of the third one.
Yep.
Which is still the same head. That's still Coco Loco. It is, yeah.
Yeah, a whole bunch of Coco Loco going on the cover of Brujerismo, which came out on May 17th, 2000. Runtime of 35 minutes and 44 seconds. Still on Roadrunner. I do think that this is probably the point where it really starts to solidify into something. They inject a lot more groove into the sound on this one. Guero Sinfe and Asesino and Juan Brujo are the producers on this. A lot of people in the studio for this. Juan Brujo, Asesino, Fantasma, all doing vocals, guitar, bass vocals. Guero Sinfe, bass vocals. Renudo drums, Hongo bass guitars, Pinchy Peach vocals. Petitis, female vocals. Hongo Jr. drums. Cristo Di Pisto guitars. Marijuana Machete vocals. I mean, just like the gang element of this as far as number of people in the recording booth who are probably not ever there all at the same time. It's really growing here.
So I think this is the point where they, sorry, go ahead, no, Tracy.
No, go ahead, Gaten. That's fine.
I was going to say, I think that this is also the point at which they turn a lot more decisively into the direction of like nu metal and industrial kind of stuff. And I am not a huge fan of it, to be honest, because it just ends up sounding like other stuff. That said, I think there are some really fun things on here as well. And I imagine I would be a lot more impacted by it if I could really understand what was going on the lyrics.
Agreed. Well, not agreed in all sense, but agree with you. If you could understand the lyrics better, that'd be great. But I think this is probably my favorite that we've done of theirs musically, in that Dino's Fear Factor riffs are fucking up front center on this fucking thing the entire way through, and I am here for it. Like, it feels very much, I don't want to say he recycled them, or kind of like he wrote it and it's like, well, this isn't quite Fear Factory, I can use it here kind of deal, but I mean, it kind of does have that feel to him. But
I mean, I'm sure there were focus groups at malls with you and your friends, Tracy, where they figured out that's where this needed to go, this new metal groove juice situation. I could definitely tell. I was like, this sounds like Primitive. It sounds a lot like Primitive to me, right? Which is almost this exact same time. I think it's maybe the following year, actually. So yes, it does definitely sound like that new metal moment. I agree, in terms of the groove juice and the production and the wall of sound thing. And I, for different reasons, because Gabe and I have different life stories, I'm here for that shit. I was impressed at how good this was. I missed this somehow. You couldn't keep track of everything. And so I just, as much as I love that last one, part of it is the 5-year gap or whatever. I just missed this. So this was the first time I'd heard it. And I'd heard the one with you all from 23. I was like, I wonder what this is going to sound like. I'm like, oh, it sounds like Roots Bloody Roots. I don't know. I think it's fun. I don't know. It is certainly more listenable than the first one.
Yeah. Didn't you start grad school in like 2000, David?
1999. Back in the late 1900s, as my daughter says.
Dad, you're old. That's what she says.
She's like, back in the late 1900s, you mean? I'm like, yes, back then. God damn it. Anyway, yes. 1999. So this was that exact time. This was grad school times.
Yeah.
I was listening to plenty of metal. I just missed this one.
Yeah, but I agree. This sounds like this focal point of like new metal that we're here for. We were just, I guess, molded by our experiences differently than Gabe was.
Well, Gabe wasn't doing this then. He had other shit he was doing.
He missed the new metal bus.
I don't know if he missed it.
I missed it.
I think he saw it and was like, no, I'm good.
It's like, I'll wait. There will be another bus coming along.
Fred Durst, just like, come and just get on the bus. Like, no, I'm good.
It looks like the fucking the War Pack and the latest, what was it, Thunder Fury Road and Mad Max. That's what Gabe saw.
I met Gabe in 2002, and he was not rocking Slipknot, Korn, or Limp Bizkit. I know that for a fact. So,
but in 2003, you like gave me all this stuff, like on MP3, you gave me like Sepultura and like, you know, all the good stuff, Ministry and
He gave you this look like a raised eyebrow. I'm like, thanks, man. I'll listen.
I think allegedly is the word we're looking for here, everybody. But yes.
I texted you proof earlier, David. I don't know if you saw my message, but.
Oh my gosh. No, actually, I'll look at it later. I did not see it. Amazing.
Okay.
I love it. No, I know. I used to be like, who wants 20 gigs of shit? I don't know. It's just.
But the funny thing was, like, that never came up after that. It was just like, all right.
You had it.
But anyway, I can see how you guys would like this, and it is really cool if you do like that industrial stuff, like in that direction that Dino is taking it. But it's interesting to me also, like in the sense that the style changed so much, like just over the three albums, where like you couldn't have predicted that this album would come like based on the first one, like totally just unexpected.
Yeah, I agree with that. Their sound had changed quite a bit. And, you know, I'm an easy mark for this groovy stuff. Having as foundational as Pantera was to my metal listening and pulling me away from thrash. And there's still some elements of thrash and death metal on this. But, you know, this is a really, I don't necessarily want to say that their sound coalesces here, because the sound changes a little bit on the next album. And as Gabe has already said, the one that came out this year reverts back towards the original album. But man, they have been like pretty willing to change up their style from album to album. But I do think that it is starting to not necessarily sound wise, but production and everything else wise, get the Brujeria sound on point on this album. The concept has been proofed fully, I guess, is what I'm saying.
That is for sure. Extensive focus groups have figured out that this is how they're going to scare people, and they have a lot more money, clearly. And we have to sell records, and it's 2000, so they do that. Yeah, and I think this next three albums are precisely the ones where it's like a real band. So I think it's not surprising that's got some like writing continuity and such. But they, you know, they fuck around, whatever. I don't think this band has ever taken itself too seriously, which is a good thing. They seem to, you know, I think initially it was because they were invested in all kinds of other stuff, so it like lowered the stakes, but there's not. Yeah, I feel like they're doing exactly what they want to do here.
Yeah, and I don't want to play too much into him being in the production chair, but the emergence of Juan Brujo, considering like this is Dino's last album with the band and everything, and him kind of carrying over and being in everything kind of is that thread that takes over. It's kind of, we're seeing, I don't want to say a complete passing of the torch, but a little bit of a passing of the torch within the band itself.
He also kind of seems just like based off of the albums after that, with the 16-year gap between this one and the next one, and then 2023's, like getting everything back together for that album and kind of like just kind of like force of willing everything into place, it seemed like, just kind of looking at the information of what them going through it, and just kind of like how much. I wonder how much a role he had in these first albums too. He's kind of like directing it in a sense, kind of like more of a him and Dino might have been like one and two kind of deal of like kind of doing it. And then Dino stepping out, he might have like, well, guess it's just me now.
Well, see, I kind of wonder if like there was something that went down, and I don't know this, but the reason I wonder is because like Dino releases two albums that are basically Brujeria stuff, but it's under the Asesino band name. So I don't know. I don't know what happened. If it was just like it was purely just a solo thing because it was easier to get him together and do this than this like 15 people that have been over the last 3 years.
I think he did it to fuck with Tracy, probably.
Maybe. So he's like, oh, that way Ben can have some more stuff to inflict pain on Tracy with later.
Yeah, Asesino blast like next week. Good for you, Tracy.
Well, I think it's also partly because. Technically, I'm trying to see when exactly like they kind of, I guess, like they break a split for Brujeria. That might have been part of it, is the split there is like they were kind of done, because you also see Dino kind of falls off because he splits from Fear Factory after a year later.
His life is complicated.
Well, I mean, I don't know, because like, so if we look at the, we're going far field, but Tracy asked the question and I just have to have it right here. Fear Factory releases Digimortal in 2001. We know that this came out in 2000. The first Asesino album comes out in 2002. The next Asesino album comes out in 2006. And he is doing Divine Heresy, another band that he started, until Fear Factory comes back with Mechadies in 2010. So he was basically releasing an album a year there. It was just not in either Brujeria or Fear Factory.
I'm going to stare at Troy.
Yeah, it's just interesting, kind of like, well, fuck it. I'm going to do my whole thing with strippers and hookers. And it's like, never mind.
Wait, what?
I'm going to do my whole thing with blackjack and hookers.
Yeah, he's an album producing machine on the par with Gene Hoglander. I mean, it's just like time to make a bunch of albums. He's not a hired gun quite to the same degree that Gene Hoglander is.
Yeah.
He can mechanize, but
not at all.
But yeah, he cranked out shit. He's never not cranked out shit. Even the stuff with Fear Factory was a bunch of legal bullshit. Oh my God, I want to relitigate the Fear Factory debacle with you. But
yeah, go check out our blast on that to hear
more. We have that. And I think, Tracy, it is. I think we do too little non-English stuff, and I'm highly tolerant of that, maybe more than I should be. I've just been in so many environments where, like, I don't know what the fuck any of these people are saying. And I look at how many people, as Ben mentioned, just mouth English lyrics and don't really understand them. I'm like, I guess it's just a thing you could do. I don't know. My Spanish is not good, but I also am really anal and like, I'm going to look this up. So I tend to look at a little bit of it.
Yeah. So it looks like the split for Brujeria and the split up after this album is tied directly to Fear Factory, because Herrera leaving Fear Factory and it kind of shizzed him into this. And it's like, and then the band's like, what the fuck do we do?
I killed them both.
Yep.
Buried them.
Well, yeah. We ready for tracks or?
Tracks. El Tracos. I don't know the word. See, my Spanish is not good.
Yeah. I'm ready for tracks. Go ahead, Tracy.
I like La Traición. Traición. I don't know how the fuck I say that. Pitis Te Invoca. That's a pretty fun song there. And Division del Norte. So there's about three on here.
Yeah, that's positively like a mixtape worth.
It is. Maybe a full album by the end of it.
Well, I like more than those three. I like the opener. I actually think the closer on this one is pretty good. I like a lot of this in the middle. The Marcha de Odio and Antaquestro, I think, are really good middle of the album tracks. Again, this is 35 minutes long. Take the ride, dude.
That's what I would say, too. I don't have a whole lot to add. Not that I'm like Elian Gonzalez. I see, I remember all this shit, too. Anyway, we don't have to get into this. I think this is a fun, cool album. It was better than I was expecting. Yeah, Petite State and Volca was one of my favorites. I liked all the ones Tracy liked. Yeah, this all right, and also Guiden a los Niños, that track, that song is badass. So this, but I would take this ride. It's really not that long. They do not, these are like band approved length albums. Brujeria's dudes have other shit to do, so here's 35 minutes.
Yeah, I don't have too much else to add. I would say the last three are pretty good. I'm also really into División del Norte. I think that song has, weirdly enough, it has Fugazi vibes. I'm not sure if anybody else hears that in there, but
I do. I know. Yes. Sure, yeah. Do.
All right. So that'll bring us to their fourth studio album, the last one we are doing this evening, released on September 16th of 2016, Pancho Aztlan. Runtime 46 minutes and 14 seconds. They have changed from Roadrunner to Nuclear Blast Records here. Russ Russell, Eddie Casillas, Ross Gonzalez, and Huey D are the producers. The band, Juan Brujo, lead vocals, Petitis, guitars, backing vocals, Hongo, guitar, songwriting, El Cinico, bass, backing vocals, and songwriting, Fantasma, bass and backing vocals, Pinchy Peach, samples and backing vocals, Hongo Jr. on drums. Additional personnel that they brought in are Juan Ramon Rufina Ramaz, who did the narration, and El Podrido on drums. Angelo Biafra and John Greenway get riding callets on California Uber Asanat. Imagine that.
This one feels like the album that would have followed the second one if it wouldn't have just landed right smack dab in the middle of nu metal. Like, I feel like this is kind of like the next logical step, with three being kind of like the detour. Because this sounds much more in line with what 1, 2, and 3 sounded like, and it sounds much more close to the 2013 albums than it does here. And it's very interesting considering the turnover they had between the albums, that you get that this has such a similar style to those albums that it came from as well.
My grades will not reflect this, but it kind of reminds me of the thing that people always say about the Highlander movies, which is that there was Highlander 1, Highlander 2, The Mistake, and Highlander 3, The Apology. Because I do think that this one is going much more back towards what was going on with the first two albums, as Tracy's already said. And I like the third album quite a bit, but this one, you know, does reintroduce elements of grindcore. It still keeps some of the groove metal, but it's not as new metal-y. And it's amazing because there's still quite a bit of consistency with the personnel, but it really, and I don't know if it's an improvement in like recording technology, but all these albums have progressively sounded better from the production wise. And this one is just amazing. I think this is the best produced of them. And I don't know if that's because they're on Nuclear Blast now instead of Roadrunner, or just the technology's gotten to the point where it's easier to do, but.
Yeah, this is by far my favorite one, I think, that we do tonight. And I think that has to do with, number one, the way that it sounds amazing. And also, it is the deathiest of the bunch. And I think that it really, you know, showcases the actual writing here. Whereas I think you can kind of get away with like mostly being message, because they have a, you know, they have an interesting message and a message worth listening to. But I think that this is just, it's super deadly. And I just really enjoyed it.
David?
I thought this one was, I think it's pretty good. I think they've moved in that direction of, I liked the indigenous language stuff. That was pretty cool. It's again, there's a little bit more tongue in cheek stuff happening here, which takes us, I think there's a lot of that on that album we reviewed. I think it's almost even sillier, if that makes any sense.
It's very silly.
It's pretty fucking silly. So this is already trending in that direction. I feel like they're playing with some stylistic stuff. I really love the cover. I don't know. You know, it's cool. But I'm a Brujeria fan. I admit I kind of maybe like the two albums before this a bit more, but I would certainly listen to this before I would listen to the historically important concept album that started them off. But yeah, I thought it was right. I thought it was certified all right. And you'll see in my grades, this came in just a hair lower than the middle two.
Yeah, it doesn't quite feel like it has the urgency of the ones with Dino. And I don't know if like that's me knowing he's not there or what it is, but there's still some cool stuff here. You know, I've already said I think this one sounds immaculate with the production. You know, I have been a fan of the sound of the instrumentation throughout all of it, the guitar riffs, the guitar tone. But the mix on here is pretty good. You definitely do see like a re-injection, as Gabe and David have already pointed out, of some of the more over-the-top elements back into this, as opposed to what was on the album before it anyway, and even more so on the second album. Tracks? I guess I can go. I think the opener is incredibly good, and I like the closer quite a bit, so it bookends the album very well. Copana Mujer is a great song. Also like Plato o Plomo and Angel de la Frontera. Just a lot of cool stuff throughout here.
I would say Take the Ride, and my favorite run is 1-6. So Pocho Aslan, No Aceptan Imitaciones, Profecia del Anticristo, and Angel de la Frontera, Plato Plomo, and Satango. I think that it dips a little bit near the end, personally, but I think that the cover is great. I'll take that song any day of the week.
I liked Plato Plomo, Satango, and Mexico Campeón. Mexico Campeón is just kind of just more fun overall, just kind of the feel it gives to it. But this is, I think this is better than their 2023 album. This is kind of like, of their traditional style, this is probably the best one they've done so far.
You read?
I don't know. This all is pretty fun. I'm team Take the Ride, I think, on this. And again, it's only what, 46 minutes? Who doesn't have 46 minutes? I don't know. I like this album.
This is their longest album too, I think.
Yeah, but you know. I don't know. I'm gonna give a shout out to Mexico Campeón, it's cool. Codigos. I like the second half of this album maybe a little better. Weirdly. I'm not always a second half of album guy. I think Gabe is that more often than me, but I think here they were just, I don't know, there were more bangers there. And I, and part of it is also, I just, I'm so crazy about that dumb cover. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a really dope cover.
I fucking love it.
It's cool.
It's cool. So, I, yeah, this was a fun record. Yeah. Good job, Brujeria. And Tracy didn't cry or go into therapy instantly.
I didn't realize that was the face from the first album until you guys said it. Then I saw this. I was like, oh shit, this is, I didn't realize. Okay. They really went there with it.
That dude, yeah. All right. Time to grade these things. Matando Guerreros.
What you gonna set us you set us down this path, Ben? Let us lead the way.
I enjoyed this quite a bit. I mean, is it their best one? Obviously not, but I, you know, as a beginning album and also for the historical importance of it, I'll give it a slight bump, so I'll make it a B+.
Hell yes.
I guess I'm gonna get the other bookend, maybe other bookend on this. I don't know. I'm gonna come in. This was my least favorite album of the night by a lot. You can definitely tell this was a proof of concept. I'm like, hey, we can make it work. As David had said, it's rough around the edges. It's grindy. If you don't like grindcore, I don't know how you're gonna feel about this album. I'm gonna give it a D, a 65.
Hell yes. I'm gonna bring that back up. Not all the way to Ben Country. I'm gonna give this a very respectable B-. This is an 81. You know what you did, guys. But anyway, as a concept, it's important. It's historically important. And fuck you. So 81.
So not very shockingly, I'm coming in close behind David at a C. I do like grindcore occasionally, but I feel like, you know, not a lot of meat on the bones. So, yeah, just a regular old C.
That's going to give us an average of 77. Would you buy this album, gentlemen?
Sure. I would.
Like,
oh, the first one. I did buy it. It's too late, yeah. Tracy. I did buy it.
I think I'd buy this for the album cover, but that would be it. If like it would literally just be the display, just to like look at this album, like, oh fuck. Like we're reading nothing else for it.
Understandable.
Raza El Diado.
That was fucking dope. The second half is a little weaker than the first half, so I'll dig it a bit for that. I'm gonna give this a solid 90. Shut up, everyone. Shut up. I love this album so much. It's not well, 90. David, I didn't make it at 99 or 102, Tracy. What do you want me to say? The dean will hear about it, I know.
I'm going to say, you came up a full letter grade on this, and I feel like it is deserving of a full letter grade improvement from the first album. So I'm going to give this a C, a 75.
Nice.
Hot. The curve is consistent.
All right.
I'm right there with David. I think this is an A-.
And broke the curb.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think this is good, but it's not my favorite. I will say that the second half is also not my favorite half of it. This is going to get an 87.5. I like it. I like it, but it's not my favorite.
Okay. That gets an average of 86. Would you buy this album, gentlemen?
Yeah.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
I wouldn't. This leads us to our third album, Brujerismo. I'll go first on this one. This is my third album of the night. I think it's a solid, well done album. This is another full letter grade improvement. And I just, the basking in the men, the 90s new men on this was on point. The Dino's guitar work, as always, is fantastic. But just here, it's front center. So I'm going to give this an 85.
I'm going to go a little bit down from that. You know, I don't think this is terrible by any stretch, but I don't like it nearly as much for reasons I already stated. So I'm going to give this an 80.
I'm going to bring us back up. I thought this was my second favorite of the ones we did. I'm going to come down a little to an 89 below Raza Odiata, which obviously I bought. I would buy hundreds of that album just to give more to Tracy. But this one I would give an 89.
I might would listen to Raza Odiata more than this one, but I think this one, if for no other reason than the production value and the incorporations, the groove metal stuff that I'm a sucker for, is a little bit higher gradable, so I'll give it an A.
An A.
Yeah, an A.
All right, that gives us an average of 87. Would you buy this, gentlemen?
Oh, sure.
I think this would be, I would, this would be the one I'd, first one I'd buy for musical reasons only. And that leads us to our fourth studio album, Poco Aztlan. I think I said that wrong, but Aztlan.
It's the thought that counts, Tracy.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this the highest grade of mine for the night, which will be an A minus. This is really, really cool.
Tight. Party. I'm going to come down just a bit. I'm going to put this in at 88, just slightly below Brujerismo, but it's good shit. I know they're a tight grouping, at least the three were. They're all pretty similarly awesome.
Right there with Gabe, and I think this is an A minus.
Noise.
I think this is a step down, like you guys, off of the previous album. Except for Gabe, we thought it was an improvement, but so it takes a slight step down. I think this is the best they can do with like what they're kind of like targeting, what they've been planning to do, like their progress with the first, second, and third album, in a sense, and kind of like I think they tried to re-achieve this with their last album from this year. So I'm going to give this a B minus and 81. I guess it's an average of 88. Would you buy this album, gentlemen?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Indeed.
I would not buy it. Surprise, everybody.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Well, you survived
I did survive it. As I feel hear the narco helicopters flying above me, about to kick in my windows and drag me out of my house by my hair. So I feel like it's as bad that happened. It's been a fun ride.
It's good for you, Tracy. Every week, you should be so lucky as to have Brujeria assault you every week.
I know. I just can't wait for more beatings.
Oh, I'm sure some will be coming.
Oh, I'm sure. David's got a ministry blast in there somewhere. Some other nuisance in there for me that's just going to make me want to cry. So,
Asinoblast, man. We have the answer already.
It won't be a full blast. They only have two albums to do.
Damn it. We have to get some EPs. We'll figure it out. Something else equally punishing.
Definitely. But the next blast is going to be courtesy of me, as we'll be doing Baroness, which will be fun.
Indeed.
I think I might have found a blast. Ben may not just shit on straight out the gate.
Time will tell.
I feel more comfortable with this than I have some of my other blasts I put forward.
Let's tune in and see what happens.
Thunderdome
Metal Reviews. Look out.